it's Tuesday, February 10th, 2015, and here are the stories we're covering this week. Lip TV seems to be winding down since the company that bought it was itself recently bought out. Luckily, The Big Bad Wolf is a work of fiction because UK's open housing market now features homes built of straw. If at first you fail, get up and try again. Google is taking another stab at Google Glass, but this time they're not letting us see it until it's ready. The Aquarius E4.5 Ubuntu Edition smartphone is coming to market. And your TV is listening to you. Be careful what you say. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere. Depending on where you're located in this big old world of ours, you may remember it as either the Sega Mega Drive or the Sega Genesis. And now, more than a quarter of a century after its original release in Japan, it's more convenient than ever to take these classic Sega games with you. My review is coming right up, so stick around.
Try it. Buy it.
Top stories from the Category5.tv newsroom. A lot of online video platforms have disappeared over the years. Now it looks like one, while not shutting down, is having a pretty brisk spring clean. Blip TV, the video distribution startup acquired by Maker Studios, which is now itself getting acquired by Disney, has been sending out notices to many users telling them that their accounts are getting closed. That's on top of the fact that it's currently not accepting new producers. Jeff O'Connell, an SVP of technology at Maker Studios and Blip, says, "Blip isn't shutting down, we're just closing more accounts as part of our effort to focus the library." In the meantime, while Blip the site is up and running, it seems to be somewhat on autopilot. The company's blog has not been updated in 3 months, and one of the last entries invites users to instead follow the Maker Studios blog. Of the two people who ran the Blip.tv blog, one now describes himself as VP of product at Maker and the other works elsewhere. I don't even know of Blip TV. Is that weird, Robbie? What is Blip TV?
The story of Blip TV's demise. Yeah, and that's why they were able to be purchased for so little. But fact is, we actually broadcasted through Blip.tv for many years. I mean, it was a great service to provide RSS feed provision. So the files, the big video files that we have to serve up. But then, you know, YouTube really, I mean, Blip.tv had nothing on it. But it was more of a focused platform, more for shows as opposed to little short videos kind of thing. So we actually continued to upload to Blip.tv, even though it's been dwindling for some time and viewership has gone way, way down on Blip.tv, because it still is a provision source for RSS feeds. So in an event that, say, Vimeo went down, we could roll over our feeds to Blip.tv and people would still be able to watch the show on their Roku and on RSS feeds, because it would be coming from Blip. So now that they're gone, that means shows like ours have lost that feature, but it also means that some shows that were really heavily broadcasting through Blip, don't know that there are as many anymore.
Right.
It kind of felt like it was dwindling for some time.
Well, Blip,
but it is, you know, it's still sad to see them go.
Yeah,
it was a monetizable platform, and
that story all of a sudden became very depressing to me. I had never heard of them, now they're gone.
No, they're doing great.
I didn't even know they were awesome, and now they're gone.
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
They were semi awesome.
Okay,
but they were. It was one of those things. I mean, like any startup and any company that tries to do something differently, it's got to be. It was great for content producers. That's the thing. It was not great for viewers.
Right.
And continues to be so.
Mm-hmm.
So we've pulled out, so we're no longer on Blip.
Right.
I mean, the old shows are there and everything. Tonight's show will be the first one that's not being uploaded to Blip.tv, which is kind of sad because we've been there since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
We've been around a long time, folks.
So... here's a great fun story. As you can see, Studio D is made of brick, but the first straw houses in the UK to be offered on the open market are on sale. Though straw walls might be most readily linked to a story of pigs making questionable construction choices, the team behind these homes says the material could help sustainably meet housing demand. The homes are the result of an engineering research project led by the University of Bath. The houses, on a street of traditional brick-built homes in Bristol, are clad in brick to fit in with the surroundings, but their prefabricated walls are timber-framed, filled with straw bales, and encased in wooden boards. Professor Pete Walker from the University of Bath led the research and says that straw is a very efficient insulator, so these homes should reduce energy bills by as much as 90% compared to the other houses around the site.
What?
Yeah.
Are they building them in, like, a shack area, or...?
Well, I'm not done reading the story, so who knows, but I would worry... I would worry that straw is extraordinarily flammable, right? Like, timber doesn't flash burn the way straw flash burns.
Or blown-in insulation, for example. Blown-in foam insulation that I would think would be very effective and efficient... in comparison to something like straw,
but
with the flame retardation, basically, it's able to repel.
But not flame. As sustainable, right?
Not as sustainable, exactly.
This is, I think, pointing towards sustainability. You just don't want a lit candle in your home. You don't want to have Jack be Nimble over at the Three Little Pigs house. Although these are not the first homes in the UK to be built using straw bales, they are the first to be built for any buyer in the open market. Professor Walker says the more we can build out of renewable materials like straw and timber, the less carbon will be in the atmosphere, so we can reduce climate change effects. I would agree. I would just worry about the safety. Like, I would rather have a clay home than a straw home.
True.
Right?
Thinking on the carbon thing, though, that makes me think, too, that because as an organic matter, straw would be carbon absorption, right?
Right.
So would it also help to... help the air,
right? Unless you had a damp problem, because
that's true too,
right? Because straw as a natural product would mold easily,
it would
you would
go
think
very moldy.
So unless you were to spray it with a fire retardant material and a mold resistant material, thus making it less healthy as opposed to more,
right?
I would like to look into this more, maybe build myself a straw home. Google is starting again from scratch with its glass project. Sales of the controversial smart spectacles were halted in January, and development of the prototype was also believed to have been stopped. First revealed in 2011, Google Glass made a big impact in mid-2012 when the company demonstrated it at its developers conference using skydivers and stunt cyclists. It's the wow factor. But many working on the device were unhappy with the exposure because it meant its final development had to take place in public. The New York Times said the controversy the project gained gave rise to tensions among the development team, forcing some key researchers to leave. Glass development is now being driven by former Apple gadget designer Tony Fadell, who has reset the project. The new version will be developed internally and only released when finished. I wonder, like, it seems very like a covert operation. I wonder what the glass... Maybe they'll
This coming from the company that has purchased artificial intelligence companies and robotics companies and now is working behind closed doors.
I just wonder, like, what is Google Glass going to become? Because I think most of the pushback from Google Glass was that it was creepy. It's creepy and it makes you feel like you're always being recorded, right? So are they just going to make it a little bit...
Less creepy. Built into fake eyeballs?
Well, I was thinking, like, could you really put, like, maybe a contact?
That would be cool.
In your eye that records
augmented
things?
Reality in a contact lens. Now, that would be awesome.
That would be really great. That means you could close your eyes and read your email.
Hey, right? While you sleep, you can watch a movie.
Wow.
I think from a design perspective, I hope that Tony will improve upon their logo, because I don't know about you. I like to kern my logos because GL ass is not a real thing.
Robbie, I haven't had a lot of sleep. If I
all of my designer viewers are saying, yeah, learn to kern, man.
Lovely. Well, good luck to you, Google Glass. I still think you're creepy. An Ubuntu-powered smartphone is coming to the market a year and a half after previous attempt to launch a model via crowdfunding failed. The Aquarius E4.5...
We're in slideshow mode. Sorry about that.
Oh,
sorry,
what's
Sasha.
Happening?
I don't know. We just went into a slideshow.
It's the age of Aquarius. Yeah. The Aquarius E4.5 Ubuntu Edition relies on a card-like user interface that is not focused on apps. Unlike the original proposal, the handset does not become a desktop PC when plugged into a monitor. It is initially being targeted at early adopters who developers hope will become advocates for the platform. The British company Canonical, which developed the Linux-based operating system, said it hoped to emulate the success of Chinese companies including Xiaomi, with its launch strategy. This includes holding a number of flash sales in Europe beginning this week, in which the device will be sold for a short period of time, giving the developers an opportunity to gauge demand and response to feedback before committing to a bigger production run. The Ubuntu handset can run apps written in either HTML5 web programming language or its own native QML code. However, its operating system effectively hides them away. Instead of the traditional smartphone user interface featuring grids of apps, it uses themed cards that group together different facilities. Canonical calls these scopes, and they are reminiscent of the swipe-based card system used by the Google Now personal assistant. The phones themselves are being made and sold by a Spanish company, BQ, which already has an Android variant of the hardware. They include an 8-megapixel rear camera, a 5-megapixel front one, and a 1 gigabyte of RAM memory. They will cost about €170, which is $195 or £127. So this is a phone that I would want, Robbie?
Yeah.
Yes.
What self-professing geek wouldn't want an Ubuntu phone?
So what's a scope? What do you think a scope would look like?
Well, I don't know. You know, I'm going to have to experience the Ubuntu platform on phones. I really like the Ubuntu Edge and the whole idea behind Mark's vision for a phone that was dockable to become a desktop computer, basically. Really kind of like that idea. So where they're going with it, we'll have to see. I know that some of the flash sales are going on today. I think they're taking a break, but we're going to see more and more of these getting actual physical reviews since they are becoming available on the market. So
what you're saying is that possibly this could be a product that I could have on my new show?
Hey, there you go. That'd be an idea. Eh? Want a new phone? How's your Samsung treating you? Because this would be kind of bleeding edge. For sure. No pun intended.
How awesome would that be? Not so awesome in the tech world. I feel like this happens weekly, actually. Samsung is warning customers about discussing personal information in front of their smart television set.
What?
Yes. Scary stuff. The warning applies to TV viewers who control their Samsung Smart TV using its voice activation feature. When the feature is active, such TV sets listen to what is said and may share what they hear with Samsung or third parties, it said. Samsung's privacy policy for its net-connected smart TV sets explain that the TV will be listening to people in the same room to try and spot when commands or queries are issued via the remote. It goes on to say, if your spoken words include personal or other sensitive information, that information will be among the data captured and transmitted to a third party. The third party being the company providing speech-to-text conversation for Samsung. Publicity about the issue led competitor LG to create a software update which ensured data collection was turned off for those who did not want to share information. So from what I understand, your information will only be gathered while you're actually actively using the voice recognition on your remote. Like, it's not always constantly working.
That's kind of the misconception, I think, when it comes to, you know, news stories and these kinds of technologies, and there's a fear-mongering that happens.
Right.
And Samsung's immediate, almost, well, the warning or the admission that this is actually happening kind of makes everybody sit on edge. But the fact is, to activate Siri, what do you do? you hold mm-hmm. in the home button or
right.
there's a process. So on your Samsung remote, there's actually a button that allows you to activate the feature.
I have one of these remotes and literally I have to press a button, talk in the microphone, channel 4, and then it switches to channel 4, right? So if while I'm pressing that button, I say, I am planning on taking over the world, right? Then everybody hears that and it doesn't switch to channel 4 instead.
Maybe
I don't
take
know.
You over to the Microsoft channel or
yeah,
something
exactly.
like that.
Google Glass. Okay.
Yeah, I think that it's more, it's the fear of you don't necessarily know what your technology is doing behind under the hood, behind the scenes. I mean, we hear about smart cars and the fact that they're broadcasting unencrypted information and being able to be controlled by unencrypted connections. And then you have a smart TV that when you tell it what to do, it actually transmits that voice command to a third-party service. If it doesn't recognize it off the bat, it's translated then and sent back. But who's to say, you know, is that... Who's intercepting it? Who's controlling it? Who is in charge of that information and that content, that data? TVs have webcams built into them now. And so it starts to become very creepy when you think about the Big Brother aspect and, you know, the ability of governments to, you know, use these kinds of technologies.
Mm-hmm.
That it could happen, I think, makes people fear that it is happening, even though it may not be.
Yeah. Creepy and scary, but I think we'll be okay. For all your tech news with a slight Linux bias, visit the Category5.tv newsroom at newsroom.category5.tv. For the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Dermatis.